For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, die Bundesliga-Podcast. I'm your host Manuel Feed. He's Stefan Bienkowski. Stefan, how's it going?
Yeah, very well, mate. How are you doing? Very big, big weekend, a big week for you as always.
Yeah, happy to be home. You can see it in my background. I'm not in a lobby, hotel room, airport, bus, plane, ship. What's the other modes of transportation I've used?
planes, trains, and automobiles.
I think train is probably the only one I've not used in the last 14 days or so.
Would have been the easiest.
Not many
one
train
well.
Trains in America.
Yeah,
it's been good to be home. Recovering from the World Cup, disappointing World Cup start. I always thought, Stefan, having two countries at the World Cup maximizes your chances of winning games, but not minimizing them. But here we are. We did do a big show on the German national team midweek for the Substack. So if you're interested, if you're looking for German national team news, you don't need to subscribe. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, at this rate, you might end up covering Canada longer than you're covering Germany. So, you know, I guess people can go follow you for that content as the competition goes on. But our German football content might be wrapping up earlier than expected. But it just means we have more time to do shows like this, I guess, where we talk about transfer stuff.
Yeah. And so this is the big transfer roundup, which we're going to do, I guess, all the way leading up to until the Bundesliga starts again, which is January 20th. Couldn't come soon enough, to be honest with you. This essentially replaces the previous show if you haven't gotten the memo last week. And we have lots to talk about, so we should probably do that right after this break. This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Basketball is back. And BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And it's your continued source for all sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to promo code BELAVE, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. That's it, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. So yeah, starting up first, and this is, I guess, sort of a transfer, Stefan. Hertha BSC are looking to finally get rid of their, I don't want to get lawyered, investor, Lars Windhorst, so I'm going to be polite. He seems to have found a buyer for his 64.7% stake in the club. Remember, only 49.9% of that stake is voting shares, right? In accordance with 50 plus one. If you wondering how 50 plus one works and how his share ownership and all that kind of stuff works, I did write a pretty big article for the Substack this week that touches on all of that. So for more details, head there. The new investor, if it gets approved, and this is I think the big one that people need to keep in mind, it needs to get approved by the club. So the club needs to vote on it. Early indication suggests that they're going to waive this through just because they want to get rid of their of Windhorst. But it also needs to get approved by the league, and they think it will get approved easily. I think the only thing that the Bundesliga, the DFL, the Deutsche Fußballliga, that runs the first and second division in German football, the only thing that they might be looking at and say problematic is that 7-7 partners, and I'm looking at the list here because they are a multiple club consortium, so which means they own stakes in other football teams. And then the only majority stake, they have minority stakes in a few other ones as well, but they own the majority stakes in Genoa, Serie A club, right? Vasco da Gama in Brazil, Standard Liège in Belgium, and Red Star FC in France. Red Star play in Paris, lower division club there. We both know the DFL, Stefan. We both know the Bundesliga. This is where I looked at it and I said, I'm not sure this is as clear cut as Windhorst and 777 think it is. Especially when you realize that there is other owners that could jump in. Robert Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution, which is the MLS team. And then, of course, the Philipp Anschutz Group, which also owns multiple teams, but not in Europe. They own a team in Europe, which is the Eisbären Berlin, the hockey team. So he already has a franchise in Berlin, I guess. But this multiple soccer club consortium, I can see the DFL kind of being worried about that.
Yeah, maybe. But I guess you can also look at the fact that there's already a major club in German, in the Bundesliga, that are already part of a multi-club ownership method. And that's obviously RB Leipzig. It's really interesting. So on the one hand, just to kind of maybe break down the gist of your story, on the one hand, you have Windhorst. I keep calling him Weghorst, that'd be a very different story if he was trying to sell Hertha Berlin. You had Windhorst, who's trying to, his preferable seller are this, you know, this multi-conglomerate club operation. And then on the other hand, you have a few private investors who'd like to buy them, who you said one of them owns the, is it the Patriots that he owns? And then there's another guy who owns a few clubs in North America, but in terms of soccer or football, he only owns the ice hockey team. So you've got two separate things here. You've got, on the one hand, you've got a business which is already quite well established, quite well integrated into European football, who, you know, at face value, you kind of would say, well, there's something. I think a lot of fans are quite uneasy with like the proliferation of these kind of setups in football. They're not always to the advantage of the clubs that buy them, because they can often find themselves, part of a talent production line. You know, I mean, you don't even have to go that far away from Germany. You could just hop across the border into Salzburg and you'll see where, you know, that can prove problematic. But I think if there is a kind of shine, or if there's a kind of positive to Hertha being part of this deal, is that if you look at the list of clubs that they already own, I think Hertha would probably go in there as the biggest club. Definitely the biggest, the club in the biggest division. There's Genoa there, but I think Hertha would probably have grander ambitions than maybe Genoa would. So it'd probably be a case that most of the talent in that list of clubs would probably be getting funneled upwards to Hertha, rather than Hertha producing players that are sold on to Genoa or anywhere else. You know, so there's that kind of there's the bonus thing there to that. And of course, as I mentioned a minute ago, I'm not sure if the DFL would be able to block this, knowing that basically one of their clubs already in the Bundesliga or part of one in RB Leipzig. So that's the tricky thing. But then, Maybe there would be better hands through a private investor, either through one who's already got a lot of experience in North American football, and you don't really get much bigger than the Patriots when it comes to NFL, or another investor who already has a foothold in Berlin specifically, knows the city, and, you know, maybe has some goodwill amongst sports fans in the city.
Yeah, I think the positive about this is, and I this is what the gist of my story was this week, right, is that it is American investment. And so it's outside thinking that would come in, which I think the Bundesliga needs. They need someone to come in from outside and bring some new ideas. 777 is an American investment group. Anschutz is an investment American investor. Kraft is American investment. I guess that's the positives about the story, if that makes sense, that you will have maybe someone come in and actually trying to modernize what is an old German institution, really old German institution in Hertha. I mean, they call it the alte Dame, right? The old lady in Germany, similar to what Juventus is called in Italy. So I think at the end of the day, either way, it's going to be interesting what they're going to do. I know that they're not exactly an investment group that's going to invest a ton of money into a club. They're more of like the long-term kind of investment model. I know that they helped Vasco da Gama come back into the first division in Brazil. And I think Genoa, they helped stabilizing that. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen there next. And I guess this is a developing story, so we'll have to wait and see. Maybe my final point is that in Donato Hopfen, the new president of the DFL, I think they have someone who is quite open about bringing in foreign investors into the league and kind of reshuffling it. There's also this idea that they're going to sell a percentage of the league itself, right, to foreign investors to generate money for the clubs. So, yeah, something to keep an eye on. Stefan, let's talk about actual transfer business. And we've been asked this a lot. Konrad Leimer to Bayern Munich. I guess he's a free agent in the summer. He can sign a pre-contract January 1st, right? And this story has kind of gotten cold and hot and cold and hot again. And I think with this, I guess we'll find out really soon if Bayern Munich is still going to go all in him for him. I think the problematic part about Konrad Leimer potentially going to Bayern Munich, what is it going to do to all these guys that are already there? Whether it be Ryan Gravenberch, who, because of going to Bayern Munich, essentially missed out on the World Cup squad, right? Marcel Sabitzer, his Austrian national team colleague, who's, I find, has somewhat resurrected his career at Bayern Munich. But if Konrad Leimer comes in, is there still space for Marcel Sabitzer? Is there still space for Ryan Gravenberch? Like, there's essentially only two positions. And Leon Goretzka and Kimmich, when they're fit, they hold that central midfield, right? So where would you even play him?
It's a really odd one, actually. So there's a big story in Sport Bild this week saying that he was offered the chance to move to Chelsea. Chelsea reached out to Leipzig and tried to sign him. And he turned them down and he was simply said, look, I'm moving to Bayern Munich in the summer. I've already made up my decision, made up my mind, rather. That's my final decision. And, you know, that's that. Thanks, but no thanks. Okay. And as you said, it's such a weird scenario because so much has changed since, you know, Konrad Leimer was first linked with Bayern Munich. It was almost a certainty that he was going to move to the club in the summer. One thing or another broke down. Obviously, you know, RB Leipzig changes over head coaches as well. And it's a lot's changed on a lot of sides. So on the one hand, you can start with RB Leipzig. They've got a new head coach in Marco Rosa. And I think it's actually quite interesting that since he's come in and since he's kind of shuffled the pack with that squad, he's also kind of changed who plays in midfield for Leipzig. So you've never actually got Haidara and Schlager are actually his go-to central midfielders there. So you can actually almost see Leipzig moving on from Leimer. You know, they've already accepted that he's going to move. Maybe Bayern cough up a couple of million pounds or euros to sign him in January. Doesn't seem like the end of the world for Leipzig in terms of how their formation works. So that's already one thing that's changed since the summer, because last season Leimer was a really key player for RB Leipzig. But then you kind of turn to the Bayern Munich situation, and since that story was kind of at its peak, they've obviously signed Marcel Sabitzer, he's came into that team and really kind of established himself, not as a starter or, you know, as a first-team player, but he's gone through a full season at the club where he didn't look fit, didn't look in form. He's kind of managed to turn that around now. You can see he's a lot more settled, and he's far more useful to Nagelsmann from week to week as a central midfielder. And then there's Ryan Gravenberch, as you talked about there. He was signed as potentially what really considered one of the kind of scoops of the summer for Bayern in the, across European football, that they were able to get this guy for such little money. There was so much back and forth, if you can remember the transfer saga about signing him. You know, Ajax wanted more money, blah, 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 blah. They finally get their man, and he has just been this kind of forgotten soul at Bayern Munich, to the extent that I'm now wondering if Bayern are still desperate to sign Laimer. Can you foresee a situation where they sign Laimer thinking, let's just sell Gravenberch in the summer?
I mean, I just wonder what they're going to do with all these midfielders. I'm pausing because I'm actually wondering what they're going to do with Gravenberch, right? I think we have to remember too that Ryan Gravenberch is just 19. I think he's 20 now, right? But at the time of signing, he was only 19. And he's playing, or supposed to play, in a central role for Bayern Munich, in a position that is, as I said earlier in the show, heavily occupied by Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka. And Kimmich is the face of this team, right? And he's not going to give up that position willingly or freely. And so you come in, you're this young player from the Netherlands, highly promising, of course. You have all the expectations in the world on you. And then you don't play as much as you maybe expected, or maybe as was promised to you. I don't know what the discussions were when the transfer was done, right? I know that Hasan Salihamidzic and Nepe, his assistant, are quite keen on presenting players like a PowerPoint presentation, so where they map out their development plan. And I think that it would be curious to see what was offered and promised during these presentations. But I think that, you know, him ultimately missing out on the World Cup squad will give him some thoughts on his future. And he's essentially, I think, has like half a year to make the squad. As for Laimer, I mean, I think I can see Laimer being in the same situation and Sabitzer was doing his first year, or Gravenberch is now, and even in a worse situation, because where are you going to put him? You know, Stefan, I'm actually kind of surprised that they're chasing this, because Lucas Hernandez came out now down with a major injury, right? And you almost wonder if Bayern Munich, knowing their abundance in midfield, are going to look at that left-back position or even centre-back position and say, well, Benjamin Pavard wants out, Lucas Hernandez has an ACL and is probably out for the rest of the season. I almost wonder if they, like, unless Konrad Laimer can play centre-back or left-back, yeah. I don't think they're going to go for that this winter. I could see them maybe do a depth signing in defence instead.
Yeah, it does make you think that, because Salihamidzic was asked that this week, wasn't he, about January signings and whether they're going to make a replacement for Hernandez. And of course he said no. He said, you know, we're happy to kind of just deal with it. And, you know, he came out with the usual party line that it's very hard to find quality in January, which is understandable. But I completely agree with you. The Laimer story just baffles me, because they need strikers. They need defenders. You know, maybe they need some fullbacks. Maybe they need a goalkeeper, but central midfield is a position that Bayern Munich really don't have to worry about unless they have plans to sell Gravenberch or Sabitzer, which, as things look unlikely. You know, I just feel like Sabitzer is Nagelsmann's man. You know, he's a guy, he's just like a very handy player for him to have. I'd be very surprised if he was happy to let him move on. And then, unless there's something specifically wrong with Gravenberch, in which case, you know, maybe personality-wise, he doesn't get on with the head coach, or he's not developing as well as they thought he would be, and they can move him on at some point. You know, we saw that with Renato Sanchez, for example, in the sense that they signed a player based on promise that didn't quite work out. So Bayern sold him with kind of key fees involved, which meant they made their money back in the long run, maybe. But I'm not suggesting that's really the case per se. I'm just pointing out that all these kind of boulders would have to move before Konrad Leimer had a clear shot at picking up game time at Bayern Munich. So really odd, really odd. And I think another kind of player in that Netherlands squad is far more likely to be of use to Bayern, which is another player who was linked to them this week, wasn't it?
Yeah. Can we talk really quickly one more time about Gravenberch? Because before we go to the other player that's linked to Bayern, I just want to really heavily point out that he's still 20. And it takes time for young players like that to develop. And I think, and I'm curious what you think about this before we move on to all these other great topics. The Bundesliga this year is weird that we only have really 15 games before the break, right? We're not even at the halfway point. And so, because we have a similar scenario with Matthijs Tel, who hasn't played as much maybe as people thought. But I mean, we're not even halfway at the season yet, and there's still lots of games to come once the World Cup is wrapped up, and there's probably still lots of players to get hurt at the World Cup. So I almost wonder if this is just too early to judge a player like Gravenberch. What do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like there's a lot of fanfare about him arriving at the club, and I am suspicious as to why he just hasn't been getting any game time. I mean, Matthijs Tel has at least been getting on when, you know, Choupo-Moting's rested or in lesser games. So he is at least getting starts and he's actually showing what he can do. Gravenberch just hasn't had an opportunity to do that at all, which is a little suspicious. But as you said, there's no real need for him at the moment, and because of Bayern's, obviously, you know, strength and depth in that position. I just feel quite bad for the player because, you know, as you said a moment ago, he was a Netherlands international. He moved to Bayern specifically because if he moved to the Premier League, then he maybe would have got shuffled out of the pack and, you know, not picked up enough game time. And that's ultimately what's happened at Bayern. So I can't imagine the players delighted with how things are going at Bayern Munich at the moment. You know, and would certainly not go so far as to say that he has to kind of move to get game time. But if he's reading the papers at the moment and seeing Konrad Leimer, not specifically the player himself, talk about a move to Bayern, but if that's a done deal, then he's probably on the phone to his agent thinking, if I can't get game time right now at Bayern Munich, what's going to happen when Konrad Leimer, who, by the way, is another favourite of Julian Nagelsmann's, gets into this team? Because he's already got three guys in front of him as things stand at the moment, and it could be four by the time the summer comes around.
Yeah, or earlier. It could be earlier than that if Leipzig decide to cash in. Interesting one to keep an eye on, for sure. All right, so I had the opportunity to sit down with Florian Wirtz in St. Louis. Stefan, that interview is now out on Transfermarkt, published this morning while I was still asleep. So thank you for taking care of that. but I thought it was really interesting talking to Florian in St. Louis, one of the first major interviews he's actually given to any outlet. And there's been a lot of rumors about Barcelona. And what was your takeaway from what he said about the Barcelona links, that he was actually not a Barcelona fan, but a Lionel Messi fan? Is this PSG now rubbing their hands?
Yeah, so a bit of inside baseball here. We were obviously kind of discussing what to ask him before you sat down with him. And one of the things I suggested was, well, there's this quote that he gave when the poor guy was probably still in primary school, or, well, elementary school, I guess Americans would call it, where he said he was a big Barcelona fan. And it keeps coming up and up again whenever these relentless transfer stories come about. So I was like, maybe ask him what happened there. And as you said, he brought it up and he said, look, I was never a Barcelona fan, I was a Lionel Messi fan, which I think is just extremely telling. You know, I mean, maybe he's just trying to be polite and be coy as to, you know, where he could move. But he seems like a kid who kind of is pretty straightforward when it comes to stuff like this. And it wouldn't surprise me if since he did say that, the idea of playing for Barcelona has kind of dropped off a cliff in that regard. Not to mention the fact that, you know, the prominence and the kind of the rise of Gavi and Pedri as outstanding players would obviously kind of block any idea of him maybe moving to Barcelona and kind of playing in his preferred position. But no, I thought it was really interesting that he basically batted away the idea of, because he could have quite happily said, oh, well, yeah, I guess I was a Barca fan. And, you know,
he
maybe
emphatically shut it down. He emphatically
it
down.
Exactly. So I think that was quite telling. Maybe Real Madrid have been on the phone, you know, but who knows?
Yeah, like he right away said no and shook his hand. I was sitting like right across from him, and he was like very emphatically right away, and he laughed about it too. And he said like, no, this is not me being a Barcelona fan. I was a Lionel Messi fan. And he has all his shirts, the Argentina shirts, the Barcelona shirts, obviously. But I guess when Messi moved on to PSG, maybe Wirtz became a PSG fan. We have to remember how young he still is, right? That's the other thing too.
So let me ask you this.
I thought
it
was interesting too.
He's obviously always linked to Bayern Munich as well. Pictured in a Bayern Munich top at some point, which he kind of came out and said, well, look, it's just a shirt that I swapped with a player after a game and I've just trained in it. Mm. But Bayern or the other club he's constantly linked with, do you think that's something that is likely or less likely, or do you think it's Premier League or nothing at this point?
I mean, we also talked to him about Jamal Musiala, right? And I think it's quite clear that he really likes Jamal. And I think the way he explained it too is that they're complementary to one another because they're different players, right? In a lot of ways, Jamal is more the elegant kind of Bambi-like player, whereas Florian is more direct. I mean, in their own right, it's kind of bad that we're being deprived of Florian Wirtz and Musiala at this World Cup tournament, because I think they are the equivalent of Gavi and Pedri, right? The ceiling for Wirtz is we talked midweek about how Germany doesn't produce many talents, and I guess the silver lining is that because Musiala obviously was produced in England, but the silver lining is that Wirtz exists, and when he does come back from his ACL injury, he will be an incredible player. I got to not only sit down with an interview for him, but I also got to watch all the training sessions when I was in St. Louis, and he looked great, Stefan. He looked really, really good. He looked like a player that had completely overcome his injury. And I think this is another thing that he said in the interviews, right? And you could see his eyes light up when he was talking about Jamal. And I think that's maybe what Bayern can say is like, look, you and Jamal Musiala could be for Bayern what Gavi and Pedri are for Barcelona. You could be the centerpiece of a team that is going to go forward for the next decade and not only dominate European football, but also leave a big mark on German football. And I think that is a good selling point. In that regard, I know that Leverkusen will want at least 100 million euros.
Yeah.
So.
Which, I mean, my understanding has always been that he'll be basically priced out of a move to Bayern Munich if they did want him.
Yeah.
Unless something very drastic were to happen. And the issue is that they don't really need him because they've already got a Jamal Musiala right there. So, you know, I'm still convinced that a move to the Premier League's most likely one. Or maybe Spain, if you know, maybe he's brushing off the idea of being a Barcelona fan, but I'm sure if they kind of got their act together and had the money, then he would be interested. But I think because of his injury, it kind of pushes back any potential move at least a season. I don't think, I'd be very surprised. I mean, you never know, maybe he comes back from the winter break and he has a great end to the season and then everything gets accelerated, but I'd be quite surprised if he did actually move in 2023. I think 2024 is maybe the most likely move for him. And then who knows who will be top of the pile at that point.
Yeah. I think we have to remember how young he is. You really see it when you sit across someone like that too. 19 is a very young age. I've spoken a few times to Jamal Musiala as well, right? And you really realize it too. They're children. They really are still children. Great personality. I think he's very intelligent, and he's also being protected in the right way by the club. And by the people surrounding him. And I think the right decision when the time comes will be made. I think I'm with you. I don't think it's going to happen in 2023. I think he's a player when he's just recently renewed his contract, right, as well. He's a player who wants to reestablish him in Leverkusen. And I think also really work with Javi Alonso. I think that's another thing that he emphasized in the interview, that he really looks up to Javi Alonso and is impressed by all the stuff that Javi Alonso has won. And I think he sees someone there who can be acting as a role model in his career going forward. And I think that gives Leverkusen sort of an opportunity to say, look, you can work with us. Leverkusen are not out of a European race. They only need to like win 3 or 4 games, and all of a sudden they're back in the conversation for maybe making the Europa League next year, right? So I think there's still a lot possible there, and I'm not sure whether a move is going to happen that soon. But it's an interesting one to keep an eye on, because I think a lot of clubs are in for Florian Wirtz. I think Bayern Munich, obviously. Barcelona has been linked. I think Real Madrid is a club that always looks for the future, and there is a couple Germans there that might have a word with Florian Wirtz, right? Toni Kroos and Antonio Rüdiger can sort of take him under their respective wings. So I think that is one to keep an eye on. I want to update on the Christopher Nkunku story, Stefan. We talked about this last week, and I think within 48 hours, a lot of stuff happened after we published. And it does look now that this deal is moving towards completion. Talked to some people that are close to it. One source told me that they sense that this deal is all but done. Chelsea have an agreement with Leipzig in place for 70 million euros. The deal seems to be firm enough that it has survived changing the change of guards in terms of decision makers at Leipzig. So I guess we can sort of maybe soon put a check mark behind this, and it's going to be interesting to see how Leipzig are going to react to all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about whether it's likely to happen or not. And I think one of the main things that I mentioned was that, like Konrad Laimer, well, not actually like Konrad Laimer, because Nkunku is very much still a starter and a star for this Leipzig side. But you know, they do already have players in that team who can step into the role for him. I mean, one that we didn't even talk about. I mean, just to kind of kick things off, Timo Werner returned to the club this season, and you know, they're slightly different players, but they also kind of play in the same kind of role. When I've actually watched Leipzig in person this season, they've played off each other very well, but they've also, to a large extent, been stepping on each other's toes on the pitch in the way they play. Both players want to play off André Silva, so it's not hard to envision a future in which Nkunku leaves the club and Timo Werner just slots straight into that team. There's obviously the kid from Salzburg who's joined the clubs, Benjamin Sesko, in the summer, who he's not very much like Nkunku at all in terms of the style of player he is, but he is another forward. And just to kind of underline that point, Nkunku is now basically a striker, or, you know, not a number 10, he's more than that, maybe a false nine maybe for Leipzig. So, you know, Sesko joining the club does kind of make up for the goals and assists that they would lose in losing Nkunku. And there's one player who hasn't even featured at all for Leipzig this season because he's been injured, but is already off to the races for Spain at the World Cup, and that's Dani Olmo, who, you know, we talk a lot about Szoboszlai, who I think he plays a strong tactical role in this team. He hasn't exactly hit the ground running in terms of goals and assists. I think he can still maybe bring more to that, but I think Marco Rosa likes having him there because tactically he's very kind of disciplined in what he does. But, you know, Rosa hasn't even had an opportunity to really show what he can do with Dani Olmo on that side, who's also a player who's routinely linked with a move away from Leipzig. But I think just because of the way the season's gone, it's unlikely he'll be moving anytime soon. But, you know, he's another exceptional young player who can only do more. So in terms of firepower, Leipzig already have a huge amount of players there. They have even more coming in the summer. And that all makes me think that they're already well prepared to move Nkunku on, whether it's in January or in the summer. I'm not entirely sure. Well, obviously he's a huge player and they'll always miss someone like that, but I think they're already well covered to let him go, really, to draw a line under it.
I love the fact that you brought up Dani Olmo, because you're quite right. He plays a pretty big role for Spain, doesn't he? And for some reason, he doesn't do for Leipzig. And sometimes you need to move a piece away to make room for another player to develop and sort of find their own role, right? And that is maybe what Leipzig are doing here. They're saying they might very well look at the squad and say, we have so much firepower and there's other young players that are already coming through the system, and this is the best that we're going to get out of Nkunku. So this is maybe a good time to cash in on an asset and move it on. I pray for Christopher Nkunku every day that Chelsea doesn't ruin him.
Hashtag free Havertz.
Everyone who listened to me last week, we got some positive comments about that though, didn't we? Among our readers, one sad Chelsea fan basically agreeing with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a problem because, I mean, it's a genuine problem because Chelsea do seem to continue wasting strikers. You know, Timo Werner's a good example of that. I'd be intrigued to hear if Nkunku has been reaching out to him to ask him for his advice on things at Chelsea. But no, yeah, it does seem to be something of a done deal. It's been something that's been in the works for a long time now. It'll be interesting to see if they kind of go double or nothing and pick up Guardiola as well in January. We'll have to kind of wait and see in that regard. But yeah, it'd be a shame to see him leave the Bundesliga, because I think he probably has been one of the most, undoubtedly he's been one of the best players, arguably the best player over the last 12 months or so. But that's just kind of the nature of football. And yeah, I think it's now a deal that suits all parties. And as you mentioned, we're now actually at a point now where Leipzig are maybe gently nudging him out the door because they've got so many players that they'd like to move on to the next level. Even though guys like Szoboszlai are getting game time, you can easily see that Nkunku is carrying a lot of the responsibility in that team. And it's about time maybe he does move on and some of these other younger guys start to step up and show what they can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Okay, finally, Stefan, this falls under the category where he's going to play. This is Cody Gakpo. As we were recording this show, he's starting for the Netherlands, doing a fantastic job for them. Scored a beautiful goal against Ecuador. I think as we're recording it, it's 1-1 at the moment. A left winger who can play center forward and right wing as well. His market value has gone through the roof. He's now worth 45 million euros. Bayern Munich are one of the teams in for him. Where are they going to play him?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I actually quite like this rumor, I must be honest with you.
Me too.
The guy's been linked to a lot of clubs. Manchester United are probably the most prominent ones in England. Because they need a striker. He's been kind of lined up as this potential Ronaldo replacement in January, which would make a lot of sense for Man United, because he is almost like a kind of traditional number nine, isn't he? And I think he gets a lot of headlines because he's one of the few players in Europe that's keeping up with Erling Haaland in terms of, you know, his goal-scoring record. Now, you know, scoring goals in the Eredivisie is a very different task from scoring goals in the Premier League, but still a very impressive performance so far this season. And the fact that he's scoring goals for the Netherlands as well in the World Cup just goes to show that he's perfectly capable of making a step up. I think, you know, we've talked about Harry Kane moving to Bayern Munich for much of the season, you know, and why that makes a lot of sense. And I actually think this probably makes more sense than Bayern going out of their way to sign Harry Kane, because he's a young player. He's probably going to cost half as much. You know, I think Transfermarkt have got him set, maybe. I don't know what we've got our market value at, Matt, but I know that
45 million.
Well, there we go then. You know, in Holland they're suggesting, I think it was Marco Timmer saying that he would go for 50 million euros, which to me seems like a really good deal, to be honest with you. If I was Bayern Munich, you know, it suggests to me that they maybe might have to kind of start considering contingency plans for some of the players they do have in that team. Obviously, Choupo-Moting's done very well, but, you know, whether he's willing to sit around for a while, who knows. And then you start wondering about whether Sadio Mane and Thomas Müller, what happens to them in the future as well. But in terms of the long term, I can see a really nice situation where Gakpo's there, Matthijs Tel's there, and that's two young players who, you know, basically sort out your front line for the next, what, 5, 6, 7 years at least, if they can hit the ground running. So it'd be interesting to see if Bayern do start to muscle their way in here, because like Bayern Munich, maybe like Manchester United, like Real Madrid, maybe like Liverpool, who, although I don't think they're maybe quite there because they just signed a striker, but like Real Madrid and Man United, Bayern are probably sitting there thinking, well, we need to sign a striker at some point, a number nine, since this whole Sadio Mane situation isn't working out as well. So if we want Gakpo, we might have to move fast. And it wouldn't be the first time that they've kind of stepped in at the 11th hour and kind of stolen a player from right underneath Manchester United's nose.
He would also be a great Nkunku replacement.
Leipzig, yeah, possibly. I think, like we just said, I think Leipzig already have their two or three Nkunku replacements, so I think they're good for that.
But what if he can have another one? I mean, they have the money now, right?
So no, absolutely. I mean, are you going to put your neck out of the line and say he's moved to Leipzig?
No. I don't radio me. I'm just making a rumor out of thin air. I just think that the profile is really interesting in comparison, right? Because it's not a natural center forward, but someone who can play also on the wing, and so it kind of makes sense in a way. But yeah, I think if Bayern Munich want to step in here and get this done, they're probably getting it done. I think Bayern Munich is kind of like Real Madrid in that way, right? If they come calling, then it's really hard for players to turn that down.
Yeah. Only thing I would really add to the Bayern Munich thing is I think that kind of move does come with repercussions. You know, there's a very obvious thing. You could definitely look at that team and say, look, they don't have a number nine. They haven't properly replaced Robert Lewandowski. So signing a striker makes a lot of sense. But there are kind of ripples that it puts through the squad, which I think that do cause issues. For a start, Choupo-Moting's been getting a lot more game time because Nagelsmann's basically accepted that he should be playing with number nine. If they sign a striker in January or the summer, he maybe thinks, okay, it was fun, but it's probably time for me to move on. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he decides, yeah, I'm happy being a super sub. Fair enough. As we talked about the Harry Kane situation, signing number nine accepts that maybe they're not willing to go down the Sadio Mane route. What happens to him? Does he just become another winger who has to kind of fight it out with Coman and Gnabry, etc.? Matthijs Tel, does he wonder, look, I was happy playing second fiddle to a more senior player like Lewandowski or Mane, but I'm not as comfortable playing second fiddle to a player that's only, what, 2 or 3 years older than me? And then finally, there's also Gnabry, who, as we've talked about on the show before, signed a new contract with, I think, the specific understanding that he would be allowed to play a more central or more striker role in that team. And if Bayern are going out there and spending 50 million euros on a number nine, maybe he thinks, right, well, there goes my hopes of finishing my career as a striker at Bayern Munich. So I'm not saying, you know, push comes to shove and someone like Gakpo showing up physically forces a lot of these guys out. But I think it maybe ruffles the feathers of 4 or 5 attackers in that squad, which is something that Bayern will probably have to deal with if they want to sign a striker, which looks increasingly likely.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the big story of Bayern Munich, right? Someone big comes in and it ruffles the feathers. That's just part of FC Hollywood. But yeah, Stefan, this has been good. I think I want to wrap it up here. As always, this show is brought to you by Bet Online. And yeah, make sure to subscribe. Subscribe to the Substack. We have lots of great stories. You did one on Germany. We vented on Germany's performance as well on the podcast. And I did something on reforming German football overall as well. Anything final that you want to add before we call it a day?
Not really, just to always check us out on the social media channels. We're trying to put a lot more stuff out on YouTube and Instagram right now, so go follow those if you use them. And yeah, as always, if you're interested in subscribing to the show, please give it a look. We have a lot of fun chatting to subscribers quite often, especially during the World Cup. Yeah. We've been putting out threads that these guys, that our subscribers can pick up after the Germany games. We'll do another one after the Spain match. So we'll try and actually maybe stick that out on the website rather than just on the Substack app, so all the subscribers can jump on, and not just the Apple users. If you want a community to get involved in, not just for the national team but Bundesliga as well, do consider subscribing. And another thing as well is we're considering sticking out an option to gift subscriptions to people. So if that's something you think that you'd maybe want to use as a Christmas present, give us a shout, let us know. And if enough people are interested in gifting subscriptions to their friends or family, we'll definitely stick that out and let people pay for those. So yeah, that's about it really.
Awesome stuff. Well, that's it from us this week. Until next week, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.